Harold Fisher. We're talking about protecting your child from predators and abusers in school, including some who may be teachers or other adult staff. My guests tonight are Michelle Booth Cole, Executive Director of Safe Shores, the D.C. Children's Advocacy Center, and Dr. Sharifa Al-Ukta, Assistant Professor of Counseling Psychology at the Howard University School of Education. Lines are still open, and we are taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're on the phone, please stay with us. I promise I will take your phone calls, but I want to drill down a little bit deeper into some of the signs that your child may be having some difficulty, whether it's with a teacher or whether it may be with a student, whether they're dealing with some kind of predator, whether sexual or otherwise. What should you be looking for, Michelle, when it comes to a child who is struggling with some issues at school like that?
Well, I think the main thing to look for is a change in behavior, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that we've talked about this. You have to know your child in order to recognize a difference. And I always like to tell parents, and, you know, this is the region, the nation's capital. Everybody's in a hurry. Everybody's so busy. Everybody's got something to do. But the fact is, children really need us to slow down and pay attention to them and have those daily debriefs and find out what's going on with them, monitor their social media activity, all those kinds of things, because that's how you know who your child is. And that's when you can notice if there has been a change in behavior because they've been exposed to something hurtful or harmful or something dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Does the silence also become an issue? You know, if something has happened to a child, whether it's bullying, mm-hmm, or whether it's some, you know, form of abuse, you know, like you said, when it comes to parents, you know, people are busy, or some children don't want to tell their parents things that may upset them. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, they may keep it to themselves. It would be difficult to pull these things out of a child.
I don't know. I think you got to be paying attention. Sometimes, like a parent, you're the detective, right? You got to know them well enough to observe those things. And sometimes too much silence is a sign, right? Too much trying to be perfect, trying to keep everything copacetic so you don't ask me what's going on. But if you're a parent and you are constantly just kind of observing what's going on, who their friends are, why have your friends, I noticed you haven't had your friends over, or I know something's wrong. So I think you have to really make sure that you are paying attention to that child, because you can have a child who is really outgoing, something happens, and they get quiet. You have a child who was quiet, and then they become angry and defiant, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of changes in behavior you're talking about, and you really do have to be observant. It's our job as adults to know them and to pay attention to them and to be in their world. Like, my children try to say, well, other people's parents, yes, you are my business. Mm-hmm. You are my business.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Anthony calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Anthony. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I initially called with a different topic because I was concerned about out-of-control teachers and out-of-control students. But as I listened to your show, I really wanted to move on to abuse and bullying more so, and signs of it. And what do you do when the system is not set up to really help a child when he's being abused or bullied, because he's going to be ostracized by his fellow students, or you bring him into the office, the system tries to deal with him, and then when they walk home, then they have to deal with the students and their friends taking retribution against them.
Dr. Sharifa, do you have some thoughts about that?
I do, and that's a very difficult conversation, and a lot of things that schools are trying to sort of wrap their heads around and develop some proactive ways to engage with it. And so I think parents and families sort of have to be proactive as well. So a lot of times you may want to encourage your child to sort of develop sort of conflict resolution skills, communication skills, where they are able to diffuse situations that they may be presented with, as well as engage in pro-social activities that sort of promote friendships and networks where they feel like they belong to a friendship group.
Explain that.
So if they... Really, this sort of helps with socializing them around their interest. So if they're an artist, if they're an athlete, if they are a singer, to really begin to allow them to integrate into those activities where they develop friends and peers that are sort of similar to them in their interests, where they sort of have a network of friendships that help to provide them with a sense of identity and a sense of self-esteem.
Safety in numbers,
and,
so to speak.
And safety in numbers and other things to do than continue to be harassed or treated badly by outside peer group.
And I fully agree with you. I have two children of my own, and they have done well, but just growing up and going to inner city schools, when kids have low self-esteem or they don't have that same level of stability in the household to help them to develop healthy self-identity, then they're sent out to be victimized mm-hmm. because they don't have the structure in the home to help them deal with the things that they run into in the streets or in school.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing I hear is, again, going back to not just the school climate, but the community climate, mm-hmm. right? Kids need to be and feel safe everywhere they go. A school climate is a leadership issue. That comes from the top. That comes from the principal or the head of school and them really setting a standard for this is how we treat people in this building and you will be safe, right? And then having policies that are written down that they can be held accountable for, that they can share with parents and students. And this is how we behave here because this is a place where learning takes place. This is a place where growth takes place, right? But if you're not articulating that, then it's not going to happen, right? And so the other piece, though, is kids have to be safe getting to school. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had conversations with teachers recently who tell me that, you know, they wanted to squeeze some other kind of professional development in. And they're like, look, we can't even get to the academics sometimes because our kids are so carrying around so much trauma and so much hurt that we're just trying to get that resolved mm-hmm. so we can get to the learning. So we have a bigger conversation to have as a community because there are children out here who are suffering, who are being hurt on a daily basis, and our communities are not safe for them. And we need to, as adults, be asking the questions, how do we create communities that are safe for children of every age, whether they're in Head Start or they're in high school.
Anthony, thank you for your phone call. How do you do that? And I think it goes back to the question I was trying to ask earlier. How do you do that without being overprotective and allow your child some sense of emotional independence? Mm-hmm. Because if you're there too much, then they don't have an opportunity to develop their own sense of learning, of understanding, and their own defenses. But then if you're not there enough, then you're throwing them to the wolves.
I think that goes back to the communication and to what Michelle's saying, knowing your child.
Mm-hmm.
So the questions can become, well, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like this is something that you can resolve yourself, or do you want mommy or daddy to step in?
Hmm.
And the child may say, you know, I'm going to try to do it myself. Well, mom, how do you think I should handle it? Dad, how do you think I should handle it? And then you give them some suggestions. You might even role play it out. And then they might go to school and try it. And if they're unsuccessful, they'd be like, no, mom, I need you to go in.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if you give them the autonomy to have that choice of, do you want mommy or daddy to step in? That'll give you sort of the gauge of how serious it might be impacting them.
Wow, I didn't think about that. Let me go back to the phone lines. Don't forget your point, Michelle, please. Anthony, calling from Brandywine. Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I grew up in Brandywine, and I hear a lot of people talk, and it was a little bit different for me. And I think when a kid gets on a school bus from day one, the bus driver should be able to discipline the kids the teacher should be able to discipline the kids, because you're not home majority of the day. You are on the school bus or at school. And if you let it get past sixth grade, it's going to be hard to get it back, because I'm one of them kids. When I was on the school bus, I got whooped by the bus driver. Mm. When I got home, I got whooped by my mother.
But see here, but let me say this, Anthony, and I'm sure, you know, my guests could talk about that. Dare I say that was then, this is now. We do live in a different world, which is not to say that discipline should still, discipline should not be an issue. But this goes back to what kind of discipline? What are the rules? What are the regulations? What has been placed, you know, on the books? Because, as you said, the bus driver whooped you. Well, you can't whoop a kid on the bus now. It just, I get it.
Don't.
I'm old school. I do understand. But certainly that kind of activity just would not be acceptable. So, you know, certainly.
The world hasn't changed. The people in the world has changed.
Perhaps, yeah. But
what I'm saying to you, if you're having kids so 85% of the people that go to school has one parent. That's their mama.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a mama and you're 5'11" and you got a son that's 6'3", what can you do with him?
Reach up.
Well, I think 100% of the children that go to school have two parents. because I think that we have to restructure how we see and we identify our children. Everybody has two parents. And you're correct in that the world hasn't changed. What we have lost, though, is the community village that helped raise our children and that were an extension of our family. And so whoopings has been around, and so has all the other issues that we're still talking about today. If whoopings cured bullying and cured all the behavioral ills, we wouldn't be having this radio show now. And so we get that whoopings work for some, but not for all. And again, the bus drivers and the teachers cannot whoop the children today. And you think about who you work the best for. I get that you may have been disciplined on the bus, but think about the teacher that you really strove to make proud. 9 times out of 10, that's not going to be the teacher that gave you the most whoopings. That's going to be the teacher that gave you the most encouragement, that said the nicest things to you, that saw the spark in you, that said you could do this and you could be this, Anthony. And that's a better way to model to our children how we want for them to behave and to be than to just constantly say you are out of control and need to be controlled by physical force.
Right. And that's about relationship. Right. Mm-hmm. So what I hear Anthony describing is a change in how adults commit time to developing relationships with young people.
I need to take a break. Anthony, thank you so much for your phone call. When we come back, we'll talk to Joseph in Maryland and we'll talk to Anthony, another Anthony, in Baltimore. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about protecting your child from predators and abusers in school. Let me go back to the phone lines. Anthony calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. Anthony, what's on your mind?
Keep your children away from bodily contact sports like wrestling. The recent scandal where a former congressman is alleged to have molested young boys, one of them claimed that the molestation started when he was giving these young boys massages.
Hmm. Let me say this, Anthony, before you go further, I wrestled in high school for 2 years. I'm good. And I think that contact sports have probably less to do with, you know, whether or not someone is vulnerable or susceptible or targeting, because again, in the Deontay Caraway case, he is accused of sexually abusing 19 children. These were elementary school children that were not involved in sports. So I think that to say that contact sports, be it wrestling, be it football or anything like that, is a gateway to abuse and sexual molestation is not appropriate. So just my thought. Go right ahead, Michelle.
So I think what we're talking about is not the sport, but right. the supervision, mm-hmm. right? So whenever young people are engaged in some type of extracurricular activity, you want to make sure that there's appropriate supervision. And again, there should be policies for what the conduct is and how many adults are around. And like Dr. Sharifa said, the more eyes, the better. Right. So that's the thing we want to make sure of. We want our young people involved in arts and sports and music and all kinds of things. Right. But we want them involved in safe situations. And I want other adults around. I want background checks on those adults who are running those programs. I want monitoring. I want training for those adults who are working with those young people in terms of child sexual abuse prevention. I want to make sure that we have taken every step that we know, because we know what we're supposed to do, right? We know what we're supposed to do to keep children safe. The issue is making sure it's done.
Anthony, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. I do want to get back to the fine line between, you know, supportive teachers and staff and those that may be slow walking a child toward, you know, abuse or being a predator. Because one of the things that we see, because not all children come from perfect homes. Mm-hmm. And some children are looking for mentors, role models, somebody to hug, a source of a feeling of love. Dr. Sharifa, as a teacher, how do you balance that? How do you show, you know, a child in school that you care, that they are indeed cared for, loved, and but still to make sure that it is appropriate, you know, particularly if you have a child that's in need of something.
So treat them fairly. So it should be unilateral. It should be, what is it that you do for one, you should do for the other. They should not be able to see that someone is a favorite, someone isn't a favorite. Teachers should also, again, establish their relationship. So what might be Greg's special talent, what might be Stephanie's special talent? And to inform them, is Stephanie, it seems like you like art, and that's wonderful. Would you like to help with the bulletin board, something within the appropriate range of a teacher-student relationship? And the teacher has to understand that they want to make the impact on the child through learning, through socialization, but they also want to help bring that to the family and through the family. So a teacher doesn't want to go past the family because it's a quote unquote broken home. They want to say, your child has a special gift for art, for reading, for language. These are some ways that you can begin to explore that at the home, because teachers can only do so much.
But what's the danger of becoming a de facto parent, a teacher,
that's
surrogate?
Boundaries. Those are some boundary issues.
Yeah, you know, because, and I'm speaking for myself, for example, I had great teachers in high school. Some of them, and when I look back, even to this day, if I were to see them, you know, I give them a hug because mm-hmm. of the genuine care and the love that I feel. But at the same time, yeah, those boundaries probably were crossed. You know, there was that genuine caring, not inappropriate, but, you know, your teacher loved you because I was such a wonderful student. You know, but I'm joking. But
and modest too.
Yeah, that there's that. But that's really hard when you have the complexities of the needs that children have these days.
Yeah, but I think you can have, you can show children you care in really meaningful ways, in ways that resonate with them, and not cross those boundaries, right? But again, we got to have the policies written down. You got to teach the teachers what it is, tell the parents what it is. You need transparency. So everybody's playing from the same playbook, knowing what to expect. And there are ways that you can have physical contact with children, and it's not inappropriate. And generally, because I've talked to people who run summer camps, right? Or little kids will bum rush you with a hug, right? But they tell you, touch the bony parts. Think about what the bony parts are on a child or anybody. Wrist, elbow, shoulder, knee, right? So if you can do those things. You can do fist bumps, right? You can do
church all, hugs.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you know. So, but the thing is, those boundaries have to be spelled out, and also staff have to be trained in them. Mm-hmm. So they'll know how to react when children do that. You don't always have to hug a child. You can come down to their level. You get down on your knees. And if you're looking them in the eye, that is powerful, right? Because you're saying to them, you matter enough for me to take a moment to get down here with you so we can communicate eye to eye.
What kind of conversations do parents need to have with their children as they start a new year? Is this a conversation that they need to have every single year or every year that they transition from one school to the next? What to watch out for? Is that when you
parents should talk to their children about safety all the time. Mm-hmm. Are you safe? Do you feel safe at school? Do you feel safe coming home? My junior high school student takes the train. Are you safe on the train? Do you feel safer getting off at one stop versus another stop?
Okay.
Who are you riding the train with? Is there anything that happened today that made you afraid? Is there anything today that happened that made you laugh? Is there anything today that happened that made you feel inspired or that sparked your interest? What was the best learning fact? Parents need to have conversation about their child's well-being as much as possible.
It's constant, right? And you can also talk about safety by referencing the things that come up in the news, in social media, the TV shows that they're watching. You can use their frame of reference to get these messages and these lessons in, right? But it's not one conversation. It's not just at the school year. It is all the time. It is all the time.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, Michelle, because, of course, one of the things that happened over the weekend was the murder of a promising rapper, Swipey. And he was very popular among the young set. And there's been a lot of talk on social media, obviously, even inappropriate speculation. But certainly I would imagine that this would be a prime opportunity to talk to a child about safety, about cultures of violence, and what is out there, even for someone who, even if they never met him, if they never knew him, that they may see as, you know, as a peer who was doing something that many young people are interested in. You know, what some I only have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to make sure that we also talked more about, for example, training, because that's one of the things that did come out of this federal report in the Prince George's County case, of the Head Start case. What kind of training do you believe school districts, Dr. Sharifa, should really focus on when it comes to discipline, comes to making sure that children, you know, understand their place, as opposed to the horrific examples that we saw in this case? I mean, is there a piece of maturity that needs to also be involved when it comes to dealing with, you know, with teachers and disciplining of children?
Maturity and professionalism, yes. And so schools also need to train regarding behavior modification. You know, that's what they're looking at. They're trying to modify a behavior in a child that they do not like. So what are the ways that you can change children's behavior? Schools also need to undergo training and do a consistent evaluation of teachers' self-care. And
what do you mean by that?
So are teachers burnt out?
Oh, okay.
Are they tired? Are they overworked? Because then they're going to their status quo, the behaviors that they're used to seeing, that's easiest for them to do, as opposed to what might be the difficult behaviors that the system would like for them to do. If they're burnt out, then they're going to engage in more quick punishment solutions than the longer behaviors in terms of behavior modification. So schools also need to make sure that they're evaluating teachers in regards to their level of burnout and how much self-care that they're engaging in as well.
Michelle, your final thought?
Right, and to go to Dr. Sharifa's point, that there's a movement toward trauma-informed schools, mm-hmm. right? So you understand what issues children are bringing into the classrooms. And here's the deal. Trauma is at the root of so much of what we're seeing in behaviors across the world, the violence, the anger, and that stuff has its roots in childhood. And we need our educators not just to understand the academics, but they have to understand, like Dr. Sharifa said, those behaviors and how to help children change. Because nobody wants to act out. Nobody comes to school wanting to disrupt the class. They want to please. Kids want to please adults and get their approval. And we have to help them be able to do that.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Michelle Booth Cole and Dr. Sharifa Al-Ukta. Thank you both for coming in and sharing with us. I hope that we've been able to provide some information that will help parents and teachers and staff as we move into this new school year. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, August 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3.